It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. Mayo have beaten Dublin and we just thought to ourselves, why not spend a little bit more time on this game? We're calling this the rewatch. We've taken time to sit back and have another look at a league game that was like no other in Dublin for well over five decades. I've lost track. John Gunn is going to be annoyed at me for not listening to his stat. The main point is Mayo hadn't won there for a long time in the league. And the two best men we could think of to sit down and troll over the videos as what they love doing every single evening of their life. Stephen Drake, how are you?
Mighty, we're back. We're back, baby. What a performance. It's time to lose the run of ourselves again, Rob. We're back on Ireland's. What are we, 1-7 to win the on Ireland now? No, very enjoyable, I have to say, and lots to mull over. But it was a good evening. It was a good evening to be a Mayo supporter on Saturday night.
I actually got a message from a Mayo fan the last day, and I left a voice note that I realised could come back to haunt me because it was meant to be sarcastic, where I was like, look, the only thing really is to decide what the second day of the homecoming is going to be. We know Castlebar will be day one, but like, where do you go after that? That's the real question. And then I said,
I'm going to Kilmina. They love me down there.
are you going telling John Riley what are the sheep and what are the cattle?
I won't know if we was...
If, forget about it, it's February. Edwin McGrail, the man who keeps our feet on the ground, how are you?
Yeah, I normally, I every second week I talk about the asterisk beside league performances, so yeah, I feel duty bound to mention it probably a few times in this podcast, but no, it was a lot of positives from the weekend. I didn't see it coming, to be honest. I didn't, but let's go.
I like, sometimes it's like trying to predict a volcano erupting when it comes to Mayo fans losing their under themselves. But I feel like a win in Tralee could be dangerous. I feel like they're in good shape right now, Edwin. I really do. I honestly do. I think everyone's taken this very well, calmly. Dublin aren't in a great place. We know this is a good young Mayo side. Sure, weren't we in an All-Ireland final last year? Let's not get carried away with ourselves. But if they win down in Tralee, I think we're going to have a collective kind of take a moment.
Yeah, and that was the barometer Pat Spillane was using, that I'm not sure about this Mayo team now until we see, you know, how to get on against away to Kerry. And I was thinking, hold on a second now, should it not be away to the All-Ireland champions that we should be judging ourselves against, you know, but Pat is never shy in talking up the kingdom, you know, but I do think that game will tell us a lot. The last, it's if you had said this time last year that we should be putting in context beating Dublin comfortably in the league, you'd be like, that could be hard. Like, but it shows how much has changed both in Mayo and in Dublin in that time.
Stephen, can I do a real general narrative here before we start getting into the detail? Which is, what's interesting to me is, as Dublin clearly go through a more bumpy patch under regeneration, let's say. And that's what's happening at the moment. They didn't win the All-Ireland last year, and now they've started the league really slowly. Mayo, despite their travails and their issues with winning All-Irelands, seem to be doing transition better than any team in the history of football, because this is a new team and they're still at the top table and they're producing almost new stuff and getting even better in certain ways while still having the same old problems, obviously, on the big stage.
Yeah, well, transition is, it's an interesting word. You know, it's a team that's been in the last two All-Ireland finals and they're in transition apparently. So, you know, look, when you're in that situation, and when we spoke about this previously, you know, especially going back to, you know, the final last year and how disappointing it was, you're looking for sort of green shoots in relation to sort of concerns you would have had regarding that game and regarding, you know, the losing of that game. And I certainly think from our perspective, you know, I saw one or two little things in the first two league games, but last Saturday, you know, there certainly was some really positive green shoots in relation to how we play, in relation to some of the younger players and their development, and overall positive narrative in relation to that. Now, you know, flip that to Dublin, and you know the trajectory is going in the exact opposite direction. They seem to have regressed even from last September, August, September, so to speak. So they're going through a difficult period, no question about it. You know, we have to realize that in relation to how we sort of analyze our performance. But at the same time, it's still Dublin. So, you know, you're not playing a Division 4 side, you know, best of respect in the world to those teams. But this is still Dublin. It's still a Division 1 team. They're still going to win the Leinster title, I would say. They'll be challenged more this year. But, you know, they're still a top 4 or 5 team until proven otherwise in Championship. So there's still a certainly still a challenge in Croke Park. So from our perspective, very, very positive day, on Saturday. But again, you know, we don't want to dial it up too far very quickly, but we are going in the right direction.
Yeah, well summed up. Edwin, just off the top, beyond that, like the direction change, the stuff that Stephen was spotting, look, we were chatting in a WhatsApp group beforehand as we set the tone for this conversation. And I mean, we've tried to identify trends in the first two league games and where we really were, you know, squeezing every last drop out of the video to find it. It was clear as day. There was a whole new feel to this.
Yeah, I think James Horne said Michael Gallagher to task a couple of weeks ago about have a look and come back to me. I think we can all come back with the answers now fairly confidently in terms of what Mayo are trying differently. And I think the interesting thing about it is, and I made this point in the paper today, that game on Saturday evening was the best game in which to try these things out, because you had it in Croke Park and you had it against a Dublin team who were defensively there to be got at, and there was so much space in that full back line. I'm not sure, you know, Mayo will be able to play as expansively or with so much intent against Armagh in Roscommon the next day. So that just kind of shows where Dublin are at. But it's such a welcome shift in focus for Mayo in terms of how they're approaching games, that they're willing to go direct, and not just direct for the sake of it, like, you know, when they were lurrying ball into Aidan O'Shea at the edge of the square and hoping he could, you know, catch it above two men and turn and put it in the net. There was the movement in the full forward line was a joy to watch. They were, you know, they were making the space by virtue of their movement, and every time anyone out the field got on the ball, they were looking to play it directly in, and boy, did it pay dividend.
Stephen, if we compare it to last year, though, 211 is kind of a low enough score in a game that they created so many chances. Ryan O'Donoghue didn't have the greatest game in front of the post, for example. Paul Towey looked lively, but, you know, there weren't points flowing from him either. Your thoughts on that kind of side of things? There's still a little bit more to be found out of that forward line.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the thing. And obviously, we're in the early stages of this. It's not necessarily a shift, but it's you're just looking to add strings to your bows. So Mayo will always be a very energetic and hard-running team. But you want variety, Rob. So that's the biggest thing we called out after the Ireland final last year. You know, when you know, our game plan was negated, where was the variety and where was the, you know, the specific change to sort of redress, you know, the issues we were having? So, you know, the score necessarily wouldn't concern me. You know, the intent is what's the most important thing. You know, there was a couple of situations where we were very, very close. You know, Diarmaid early on overshot a pass that went over a couple of guys' heads. You know, that could have gone in. A goal could have been buried off that. You know, there was no way he was a pick off the ground for the goal that Matthew Rann ran in. So again, that should have been an extra score on the board. So the specific things like that, you know, what I wanted to see was, you know, that structure and that intent. And Ed pointed out, you know, some of the scores, Aidan Orm's score straight after Jack Carney's goal. What a fabulous score. You know, there was a turnover down our end. Michael Plunkett, you know, on our own 20-yard line, got his head up, fired a lovely ball out to Jordan Flynn. A lovely outside of the route, outside the right foot pass to Ryan, who slipped it to Lee, and a brilliant run by Aidan inside. Great pass, could have taken the mark. And, like, that's a marvellous score. You know, the ball didn't touch the deck barely in 100 yards of play. So the important thing from that perspective is the intent, and to see that shift. The scoring will come as we get better and as we become more clinical. But I do think, you know, it's a couple of decisions and whatnot, there were more scores that were left out there. So from my perspective, I wouldn't you know, that's something you have to work on and continuously. But really, to see that intent and to see that real structure there was brilliant.
Yeah, and I think the big test will come in games where, you know, you have to, you're left with a decision: do we kick or do we run? It was on an awful lot the last day, and they were willing to take a risk, and they were willing to, like, there's a shift in a mindset shift in terms of kick passing across the game, where teams are willing to take the risk of a turnover. You go back to 16 and 17, and possession was key, and sure, kickouts were in vogue because it didn't matter where you won the ball so long as you had your possession and you went through the lines and so on and so forth. Whereas people are now realizing that if the full forward line get an early ball, they can do real damage, you know, and that's where goals are going to come from. You're not going to get a goal. You're going to do awful well to get a goal when a team have 12, 13 players inside their own 45. So there was opportunities for Mayo to exploit that the last day. Where the test will come is when they're against other teams where there might be three or four opportunities for that ball all day, and knowing that that's the time to go for it, and knowing when the time to go for it, or when it isn't on, and when you need to run it through the hands, and, you know, getting that kind of game awareness going. And that's not simple, like, and it's not going to be overnight, you know, but the willingness to do it is absolutely to be welcome. And I was, given how little Mayo have played that way over the years, I was very taken with how well it went. Yes, 2-11 mightn't be a great score, but I thought I would nearly say first time out playing like that, particularly with this group, I thought they did really well in that regard.
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve. Myself and yourself had a conversation at the Kilmina match about certain players that were turning over ball, but then we were identifying other elements of the game that was working really well. And that's one thing I'm scratching my head about. There are certain Mayo players out there that at times everyone's given out about, but then you start to think about their overall contribution. It's not all about how many turnovers you have. Let's start with that.
Oh, look, 100%. You know, and like everyone brings something different to the table. Like, who would have thought, right? So, like, Jordan Flynn, for example, might have been a little bit maligned, right, over the last 30 years or so, and people are wondering, scratching their heads in relation to some of the performances. But you look there the last day, and I hadn't seen it probably before, maybe once or twice, but I didn't realize, you know, the variety he had in his kick pass and how accurate he was when he was given the opportunity to express himself a small bit, you know, and some of his inside the right boot, you know, kicking from sort of left hand side out to the Cusick stand side was just absolutely fantastic. So, you know, it's and you sort of seem to forget, you can forget at times that a lot of these players are playing within a specific structured game plan, and you know, they've been asked to do a certain job, and, you know, supporters don't tend to realize that. You know, even I know my own brother, for example, right? Like, I remember, you know, when he played in this, was it 17 semi-final against in the final, I think. And, you know, a lot of people were scratching their heads in relation to what he was doing, like, but he had a specific role to do. And it was to tag a certain runner, etc. And that was his job. And he wasn't asked to do a whole pile outside of that. So, like, you know, all of this will fit into a certain narrative. And that has to be sort of focused on.
Do you know,
so just, it's great, you know, just, to see these guys.
Just to jump in there, because I thought of David when I was thinking of Michael Plunkett's performance last day. So we've seen Plunkett in these specific roles. And then we see him just loose and looking like the gifted footballer that he is when we see him playing for Ballintubber. And I actually thought of David in that moment, actually.
Well, yeah, I'm like David's a fabulous, I'm not sure David has the skill set on the ball that Michael Plunkett probably has.
Fair point.
I'd probably say David's a better defender than Michael Plunkett, you know, and exactly, you know, 100% in that regard. Anyone who watches a lot of Michael Plunkett will see fabulous footballer with ball in hand playing for Ballintubber, plays a lot of centre forward for them. You know, and it's great to see him. And I mentioned that, you know, that the hand he had in Aidan Norm's score, the 2 points he kicked, didn't surprise me in the slightest. You know, he has that in his locker, and getting that freedom to express himself is great to see. And it gives supporters, you know, they say, oh, holy God, like, you know, this guy can really play if he's let play. And it was great to see guys to get out there and express themselves and sort of change the narrative in relation to how people might perceive them and think about them.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, Edwin, we do kind of start to wonder sometimes, look, we assess players within a team system, but we assess them individually then as well. And it can all get a little bit jumbled, the message.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like I would have felt, you know, watching the All-Ireland final last year that Tyrone had this ability for cornerbacks to come up and look so comfortable shooting for points. And you were like, you know, why can't we do that? Like, but turns out we can, like, you know, you know, Michael Plunkett's 2 points the last day were class. But like, yeah, there's so much football in him. I think one of the roles he often played in Mayo, and I think it was apparent the last day with a couple of the younger lads who were maybe not as confident on the ball, is that when Mayo were looking to work the ball out from defence, he was a guy you wanted on the ball. He was comfortable on the ball. He was strong. He was capable of being aggressive. He would play with his head up. And often it was just what looked like simple enough things. But you saw the last day, there was maybe two or three defenders who were just kind of happy to just keep recycling and recycling. And it was the likes of maybe Keegan and Plunkett who were happier to, and Oisín Mullen, who were happier to drive on with it. You just see how important that ability is. And yeah, I think when we look on from a distance, it can be hard to know what exactly particular roles are and how they're defined. You know, you're trying to almost guess what they are in some circumstances and see what information is in front of you in terms of what you see. But like the example Drakey mentioned there about David tracking a runner, like that, you know, we might have been watching that back 3 or 4 times before we might have spotted that, you know, and we may never have spotted it. So yeah, it can be hard to know at times what the specific roles are.
Okay, let's go from attack to defense. Let's start with attack, more direct from the get-go. What are your thoughts? Edward, do you want to go first there and Stephen jump in off the back of him?
Yeah, like from the throwing, like, you know, and again, we were talking about this in the WhatsApp group, like the Dubs look so vulnerable from that throwing as well. Three of them committed from the half forward line towards midfield, and they were all ahead of their men. And Mayo had obviously worked the opportunity. Dermot seemed to pivot back from the half forward line into position, and he just ghosted in behind the cover. And you know, you always hear it said that the throw in is an opportunity because you've 6-on-6. But and remember the goal Dean Rock got in the All Ireland final in 2020. This was even like Dublin were cut apart way worse than Mayo ever were in that game. And just a little bit more accurate of a kick pass. And it was a good kick pass by Jordan Flynn. And it was a goal within 10 seconds. So straight away, you saw the intent from Mayo and you saw the vulnerabilities in Dublin. And the three intentions for goal inside the first 2 minutes. You had Matty Ruan's goal that was disallowed. And then Drakey's mentioned Dermot tried to kick a ball over the cover and it just fell short. And straight away you were thinking, right, okay, this is what they're going after. And they kept knocking and knocking and knocking because they knew the goals were there. And yes, they could have got more goals. And the goals they got were vital because Dublin were getting a foothold on the game up to that point. And the timing of those was brilliant. And like Eamon Fitzmaurice mentioned in commentary, like, it's been that second quarter which has been an issue for Dublin, and Mayo being ahead at half time, I think it sowed the seeds of doubt in Dublin. Whereas if they had managed to stay level or stay in front and not concede goals in that first half, they'd have been a lot more confident at the break.
It reminds me of the 2 points we got at the end of the first half of the All Ireland semi final last year that just kept us alive. It's just Dublin have lost that ruthless edge, Stephen.
Yeah, they're not as good as they were, right? You know, that's the reality. Like, you don't lose the players they lost. Like, all-star after all-star after all-star and footballers of the year and that and whatnot. But we were very good. And like, from an attacking perspective, the things I was so really encouraged with, you know, we always had guys deep. So, you know, so many times we've seen over the last year or so situations where we have guys out in the middle of the park and they look up and there isn't a player inside. There isn't a player inside our own 45-yard line. So we had great depth in our attack the last day. We had at least one there at all times. A lot of the time we had two. We had really good width in our half forward line, which was great. You know, like Jack Carney had great, you know, provided great width in the 12 position in the first half. Like Dermot you know, it's obviously it's been said how good he was. Like, he was a tremendous point at 11 there. A release valve for that kick from the half forward line. Like, he pretty much set up the two goals. You know, a great take from Robbie's kick out for the second one and a fabulous ball in. Obviously, it had to be finished. He kicked two great points on top of that. I thought Aidan Orm came of age, really. The last day, he was so, so good. His movement was exceptional. Won a couple of really good dirty balls. Finished well. Took his goal well. You know, took the point well as well. You know, the movement, as I pointed to, as good a movement as I've seen from my old team. Now, again, it's under less pressure, but you have to look at the intent. The intent for guys to move and take those risks. Very brave, again, in terms of, you know, the selection and how they played. And a willingness to go for the jugular, you know, didn't always come off, but again, great to see. And then look, and the stuff in relation to the new lads, again, Aidan Orm had a great game. I thought Jack Carney, while he was on the field, you know, so showed some great flashes. Paul Towey was very deep for long periods of the game, but was so industrious, you know, worked really hard, retained possession quite well the vast majority of the time. Even had a great turnover on Brian Howard in the first half, you know. So I thought, you know, he did a good job too and contributed. So look, it was just really, really encouraging from an attacking perspective, and great to see.
Yeah, and it's funny when looking back on it, I thought in real time that Paul Towey was kind of struggling to get into the game. But again, you go back to the discussion about the role, like his role was obviously coming deep, and it's only when I look back in the game I realize the amount of work he got through. It mightn't have been the classic kind of stuff he'd be associated with, but he really rolled up his sleeves and got stuck in. And that turnover you mentioned, and again, that was such an encouraging turnover, because Dublin were trying to get inside the Mayo 45. They couldn't even get inside the 45, and Howard was going backwards, slipped, and Towey was on top of him. I think it led to Matty Ruan's point, and it just showed so much of what Mayo were doing well. But yeah, the two players I was very taken by from an attacking point of view, Diarmuid and Aidan Orm. And yeah, Diarmuid, it's we spoke in the past so much about him and wanting to see a consistent performance across the full game. Like, we spoke about how good he was in the second half and the last maybe 5 minutes of the first half against Donegal. But the, like, he was very anonymous in the first 30 minutes of that game. Very good in the second half, particularly the last quarter against Dublin and last year's All-Ireland semi-final. But peripheral up to that, the last day from first minute to last, he was on it. And I think that the role he was being asked to play and the creative role and looking to drive that ball in, looking for that ball inside all the time, I think he thrived on it. And I think we can see so much. You could see the enjoyment in his game, you know. And I just think that that could be one of the biggest takeaways from the game in time is Diarmuid's suitability for that role and his growth as a consequence. And Aidan Orm, like, he came on in the All-Ireland final last year and a lot of people were almost perplexed by it, you know, and but I know they were talking highly about him internally, and it just goes to show, like, we would have felt after the first two games that, yeah, he's doing okay, but he's a bit of work to do yet. It just goes to show, it's not simple to establish yourself. You know, you're rarely going to do it straight away. And Billy Joe mentioned last week that he was very good for Ryan O'Donoghue's goal against Monaghan, but some of his runs were a little bit tentative. The last day, he, as Drakey said, he came of age, and it has taken him three games to do that, you know. But my God, like, it's another great option to have in attack now. And yeah, he was just, what I loved about him was, he was able to win. He got the ball sometimes where he was in a tricky situation and you were waiting for him to be bottled up, particularly as a young fella. And he managed to step aside and managed to offload. And you were thinking, that's very, very encouraging, because at that level, that's not simple. And you've seen other guys who get swamped up in that situation. So it shows he's really getting to grips with the level of the game.
No, I totally agree with Ed. You know, he was so good, and it's needed. It's needed because, you know, Tommy is a loss, and we need guys to fill that void, right? Not saying you need the exact same player, but you need fellas to stand up and develop and to perform and to put their hands up and to give options. And I look, I've never doubted Aidan Orr's talent. You know, he's in the early stages of his inter-county career, so it always takes time to develop. But the confidence now he'll get from that at the weekend should see him grow, you know, more and more.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo podcast.
I have a question for you, Stephen. Tommy Conroy aside, everyone else fit, name a full forward line starting in the championship that Aidan Orm would be in. How would that shape up? Who misses out?
Oh, God.
Tough one, I know, but your luck.
Put me on the spot. Look, Ryan O'Donoghue, who's going to start? I'm assuming if he's right, Killian will absolutely start. Then it's up for grabs. Like, you know, it really is up for
could
grabs.
Could he keep Jason Doherty out of the starting lineup?
Well, he could conceivably, depending on his form and how he goes and whatnot. Like, you know, Jason is a hugely experienced guy. He had a tremendous outing in the first game, but again, you look, and I've pointed to this previously. Fellows who come back from these serious injuries, they can struggle the year after. Andy will say it. You know, you ask Andy after he came back from his cruciate, he struggled for 18 months after he came back. So it's not an easy thing to come straight back in and hit the ground running. Now, he played extremely well in the first game. He got the goal against Monaghan. But you just don't know how Doc will be throughout the year. So if Aidan Orm continues to perform like he did last weekend, then absolutely, he has every chance of being in a full forward line with the two guys. But you would have to say that obviously Ryan will play, and if Killian is right, he absolutely will play too.
Edwin?
Yeah, I think a couple of them will be in contention for the half forward line because it's brimful of options inside there, like, you know, and it's a blessing. Yeah, absolutely, that you've so many to pick from. And again, like, you go back to, there'll be certain games where different approaches will be needed. You know, we talked last week about the, you know, in generally having four forwards and two kind of guys who will be funneling around the middle. You know, you would have said the last day that probably Jack Kearney and Paul Towie were those two guys. And then you had Diarmaid Ryan. Diarmaid Ryan and Ed Norman, I suppose Brian Walsh was nearly around the middle as well, so you nearly had 3-3, like, you know. So there'll be different roles for different days, but if Killian O'Connor is fit and Ryan O'Donoghue are fit and you're putting them in the full forward line, well, they're not going to be dislodged, and then it's a hell of a battle for the last spot. Time will tell who gets it.
Before we talk about midfield and defence and lots of other elements, just want to remind you, patreon.com/Mayo podcast is a place to get all the extra podcasts, including Here Comes the Weekend. This weekend special guest ahead of the Armagh match is Stephen McDonnell. He's joining Billy Joe Padden and Mike Finnerty to talk all things Armagh football and look ahead to that big game in the Hyde Park. We'll mention it a little bit later as well. Discord was alive and well. Stephen, you were on it the last day. Billy Joe Padden, Mike Finnerty, yourself, stealing the show. Lots of other voices in there too. It was great crack.
Yeah.
You were in the crowd and still Discording. I'm impressed.
Listen, you know, multitasking is a strong suit of mine. My wife will confirm that without question. Except when it comes to washing the dishes or hoovering the floor or something.
Taking the bins out when you're trying to watch an All Ireland
semi final. No, I take the bins out.
That's important. Yeah, that's the easy one. But listen, that's a show you got to listen to. If you haven't heard our match review podcast, plenty to listen to in that. Your Flanagan was on that, and John Fogarty had a really good contribution as well, chatting to Mike Finnerty, some interesting perspective from him as well. Edwin, you know, it's been a sad week for both our clubs, actually. For Ballinrobe, the passing of Billy Horan, father of Liam Horan, of course, friend of the podcast, and Morris Horan, friend of the podcast as well. And the whole family were obviously shocked and saddened by this sudden passing of an absolute journalism legend and a Gaelic football GA journalism legend as well. a man who would miss literally no football game up at Flanagan Park, or the Lock as we refer to it, that he could, unless it was clashing with some bigger one somewhere else involving the Ballinrobe club, because he truly did follow our club up and down the county, and did the local notes on the very, what, 3 days before his passing for the South Mayo local notes. So he just never stopped working, a true legend and an inspiration to myself and anyone who's done journalism around the town, I have no doubt. I know you want to say a word on that. And obviously your own club, Brafey, had a very sad passing as well.
Yeah. Just on Billy, like I did a piece with him last month to mark the fact that he was 70 years doing local notes for the Mayo News. He started doing local notes when Mayo were the reigning All-Ireland champions. So that's just to provide a little bit of context. He was 19. He was a Leaving Cert student in St. Gerlach's, and he was approached to ask to do it. He kept doing it through college, and he did them continuously for those 70 years, and worked with the overtime, worked with the other local papers as well. Did match reports for all three local papers, did stuff for the Connacht Tribune in Galway as well. But was just... look at it. The one word that everyone comes with is gentleman, and he was absolutely that. He was such a lovely, lovely guy, and he was a really, really gifted writer. If you haven't picked up a copy of this week's Mayo News, we reprint an article by Billy from 2012, where he talks about 60 years of ups and downs in Ballinrobe, and it's just such a masterly piece of writing. It's really well worth checking out. And yeah, in Brafey, we lost a legend in the club as well this week, the passing of Kevin Jordan. Kevin played for Mayo himself in 1969. He won a Connacht title in 1969 at cornerback. Mayo lost the All-Ireland semi-final then, and Kevin played in Croke Park against Kerry by just a point. Kerry went on to win the All-Ireland. And Kevin, his son Colm, told us at the funeral that... he won two Connacht titles in one day, which was quite an achievement. He won the football title, and later that evening went along and won a Connacht boxing title. So quite the multitasker. Quite the achievement. And many of us were lucky enough to have Kevin as an underage coach. He was our under 10 manager in Brafey, himself and Kevin Curry. And if you didn't know what it meant to play for Brafey before you got involved with them, you knew afterwards, that's for sure. You know, they wore their hearts in their sleeves. And yeah, Kevin Jordan, he was, as Colm said, small in stature, but big in heart. He was a great guy in the club. And condolences to his family. It's such a huge loss to the whole community, but particularly to his close-knit family.
Love hearing that story about the wider sporting talent that he had. And you know, when we're chatting about these players' emergency, even like Aidan Norum, where Tommy Conroy is injured and we turn our eyes to Aidan Norum, and you realize this little county is just producing all this talent. We know, like, we're talking about Paul Talley's work rate. We've watched him in club championship kicking points all over the place. There's some amount of sporting talent in this county, and we really, I'd say people are feeling it this week more than ever, because for all the woes that we've had on football fields and All-Ireland football finals, Mayo is continuing to produce top footballers.
Oh yeah. And look, we're football mad, Rob.
Are we?
You know, we really are. Well, yeah.
What episode is this in the podcast? 1012 since 2009. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, look, what it is, it's religion in Mayo, you know, and I lived in other parts of the country, and I've had a bit of experience of Dublin, and I lived in Galway in college, and I've spent a lot of time in Wexford, obviously. And, you know, I've never come across a county with such a passion for a particular sport than I have with Mayo for Gaelic football. So we'll never be short of footballers, you know. And it's fabulous. It's our DNA ultimately. And I'm just glad we're starting to produce exciting forwards now, because we've about 780 fucking halfbacks. So
that's why you could never get in there for the latter years when you were thriving. I mean, come on. Give a man a break.
look. That and one or two other things now, probably down to my own.
I'm just being nice. I gave you the hard question earlier.
That's my own internal issues.
It's funny you describe.
I like the winter way too much. That was my biggest problem.
Hey, your story about training under John Mahon was entertained me on the way home at one of the days when you were on with Fino. But anyway, it's enough of that. And, you know, it's funny because Edwin Stephen's talking about how football mad we are. Anne-Marie Flynn has like, I thought she had hit one of the best articles I've read all year until she wrote this week's one, which is even better. It's a beautiful article. You described yourself, but it really did sum up the way we all went into Crow Park the last day in the rain, winter, the lights on, feeling a buzz, but trying to tell ourselves, don't be getting too excited. It's only February. She wrote it. She summed it up brilliantly. Well worth buying the paper for alone.
Yeah, and I think what I'm paraphrasing what Anne-Marie is saying here, but I think what she's saying is that after the long winter and, I'm not going to commit to it this year, a lot of people are at the stage where they're like, do you know what? Yeah, we'll go along and we'll moderate our expectations, but we'll enjoy it for what it is, you know? And it was a long winter. It was a dark night of the soul, really. And there was a lot of people who decided that they were going to take a step back. And undoubtedly, some of them are still where they are. But I think the last few weeks have brought a few people back in, some of them kicking and screaming, some of them happy to do so. But I said this for the last few weeks before the league started, that I could not wait for the league to start, because absolutely there's so much lessons to be learned from last September. But the amount of acrimony that followed that All-Ireland final defeat, I just couldn't wait for football to get started. And the way it has started has made it, you know, even more positive to be back up and running. Because we're talking about the present, we're talking about games. We're not forgetting about what happened in the past. You're still contextualizing Everton against the All-Ireland final, and we're talking about how Mayo need to have a different approach. But you're not, it's not the what ifs anymore. You're thinking about, okay, what can be done now? And so that's the great thing about when football gets back being played. You can start to look forward. And that doesn't mean getting carried away, but start thinking, okay, we've a couple more options here. We're trying something different over here from an attacking point of view. We're trying something a little bit different defensively. And you can start thinking, okay, well, they're making progress here. And time will tell how much progress, but they are making progress. And, you know, that's what you want. And I do think I'd have to hand it to the management from that point of view. You know, they've got the team moving quite well. And that's not easy after an All-Ireland final defeat like that, you know. So it's a good start to the league. It's a good it's a good kind of retort to you know, any fears that, you know, it might have been a line in the sand for that team.
You get the feeling too, Stephen, they might be challenging them in different ways, which is probably going to keep them interested. So, for example, on Discord the last day, early on in the first half, Mike Finnerty was pointing to what he felt was the zonal defensive system. Then afterwards in the podcast, Ger Flanagan was taken aback less by the way Mayo were kicking the ball and more by the way they were funneling players back at a consistent, focused rate. So speak to me from the rewatch about Mayo's defensive game the last day.
Yeah, well, I said it in Donegal. I felt there was a bit too much, you know, man marking around the middle, and fellas tracking runs across the field. Now Donegal switch over and back all the time. It's that lateral pass, and then guys moving at angles. And I thought at times, you know, that left gaps, you know, in front of our full back line. The last day was much, much better in that regard. So, you know, we were looking. We were operating zonally in the full back line. We had banks in front of them, settling on the 45-yard line. We gave them the wings for most of the game. We were trapping them into pushing the ball wide. We were protecting our goal. You know, some of the stuff that I look like the communication I thought was excellent the last day. When I rewatched as well, you know, you could see guys were passing off Dublin players as they moved out of their area, and the communication in relation to that was excellent. I saw one very early in the first half. Jack Kearney, the Dublin wing back, ran beyond him. He turned and had a shout at Rory Brickenden, and Rory was out picking that man. Jack was back putting pressure on the ball carrier. You know, they were stepping off the 45-yard line. They were looking to turn the ball carrier all the time, delay the kick for Dublin, getting our players set in the best position to cut out the eventual pass as it was going in. The pressure that was put on Dublin's key playmakers was massive. Brian Fenton didn't get an inch all through the game. Now, whether that was Jordan Flynn putting great pressure on him for large, you know, portions of it, Oisin stepped out a couple of times as well, turned him around three or four times. The same with Brian Howard. They were getting really, really tight on that. And as a consequence, then that gave up very, very, you know, maybe the one goal scoring chance that came off the really high kick into Dean Rock that was slipped. And then obviously the one the second half that Robbie made a great save from. But, you know, they were probably unavoidable in that sense. Like we looked far more solid in relation to that. Now, what that does, though, then, you know, you get clever players who can slip into nice positions off a zone and kick a few points. Kieran Kilkenny, case in point. But look, you're never gonna have a situation where you're gonna tie these guys down, you know. And it's about the collective and how you collectively defend. It's not about this cornerback holding Kieran Kilkenny scoreless, or that wing back holding whoever scoreless, or X, Y, or Z holding, you know, David Clifford scoreless when we eventually get there. It's about not conceding goals and trying to keep teams in that 12, 13 point range. And the last day we looked far better than we have in a long time in relation to that. So it was brilliant to see.
Yeah, I think one of the most underrated skills from a defensive point of view is checking a run or getting a guy to turn back when he's in possession. That will not come up in stats in terms of possessions, in terms of turnovers won. But, you know, if you do that, if you give a fella, that delays the attack by 2 seconds. That means every defender can get, you know, 10 meters further back, you know. So it just provides so much support for everyone else. And Mayo did that so, so well the last day. And I was watching on telly. Drake, from your perspective, the communication and that kind of ability to pass guys on, it's something that has appeared to be lacking in Mayo for a long, long time. How, as a defender yourself, how does that change? How was it so apparent the last evening and maybe not there as much? Is it a change in emphasis? How much work has to go into that in order for it to be working as reasonably well as it did the last evening?
Yeah, look, Balahadrin did it in the last couple of years. Now, I'm not obviously playing defensive. I'm not playing as a defender anymore. But the biggest thing is, you know, as a defender, you know, your default, Ed, is to get hands on fellas, to track a fella, not to let him run past you. And a lot of this is an ego thing. So you think, right, if I let this guy run past me, if I'm wearing 7 and he's wearing 10 and the ball's popped over to him and he splits the post, the guy in the stand is going to be screaming at, you know, me, you know, your left half back, 10's after scoring, get tighter, get closer. And it's again, a lot of it comes back to the narrative thing. So it's a very much a trust thing, right? And you know, you have to look these things. You have to check egos at the door, ultimately, right? Defenders, by their nature, don't like conceding scores. I don't care who you are or what you are. If you're a direct opponent, kick scores, you're always looking at it from that perspective. So there's always that level of ego, but you just have to remove that completely. And again, focus on it as the collective. So the aim is not to stop David Clifford. The aim is not to stop Kieran Kilkenny. The aim is not to stop X, Y, or Z. The aim is to stop Dublin scoring 22 or 3 points, or scoring 2, you know, 17, 18, or Kerry scoring 2, 17 or 18. The aim is to stop them, you know, you're creating those chances ultimately. And it's down to trust, it's down to communication and completely checking your ego at the door. So if the guy that you're standing beside at the beginning of the game kicks 3 points, but you know, you limit the team to, you know, 13 or 14 points and you win the game by 5 or 6, who gives a crap ultimately? So I seen a complete lack of ego from Mayo defensively the last day. Guys were just, it was a collective effort to prevent the opposition creating those chances. And again, look, you know, really, really encouraging.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo podcast.
I loved watching Stephen Cohen back to the role that he played last year, Edwin. Stephen, you go first.
I said it. He struggled at fullback against Donegal. He's not a fullback. You know, he won. You know, he was exceptional last year in that role. And just delighted to see him back in at the last day. He brings such assurance, such skill in terms of his organizational abilities. He's always talking, cajoling, moving fellas, speaking. I talked about communication. Playing that system, communication is absolutely paramount. And when you have your captain and your leader, being a strong voice in that situation, it's excellent. And again, he looks so much more comfortable the last day there. And look, unless he gets injured, he should be sat there for the entire year.
Yeah, and another thing that from the way they played the last evening was the way Mayo attacked helped how they defended, because the fact that they were kicking the ball inside and the fact that the full forward line was doing so much damage on their own meant that whilst there was raiding bursts from Oisin Mullan, from Lee Keegan from time to time, it wasn't as integral to the game plan as has been the case for the last decade. And so therefore, those guys could concentrate maybe that extra 20 to 30% on defending. And that's a massive difference, you know. You look at the amount of, in 16 and 17, the percentage of scores that were coming from the Mayo half back line and the Mayo defence in general was off the charts. And there was a feeling, but rightly or wrongly at the time, that had to happen because Mayo did not have enough. People said Mayo didn't have a marquee forward. They did. They did a couple of them. But that they didn't have enough of a scoring spread in the forward line, that the defenders had to come up and pierce those holes in the opposition defence. That wasn't happening the last day. That wasn't needed the last day. So therefore, Oisin Mullan could go up maybe two or three times a half, and that was it. And he could focus then on, he intercepted a couple of good balls. He was picking up Kilkenny for a while. And it just becomes a bit easier to defend when that's your primary focus. And that hasn't always been the case for Mayo defenders.
No, they say, yeah, it's that reset. It's that reset. Like, if you're shifting the ball 40, 50 yards from your half back line with the boot, you can just reset there straight away. And the amount of times, I don't think I've ever seen Lee Keegan, stop at the 45-yard line more in his entire Mayo career. He released the ball, seven or eight times from the 45-yard line and stopped. Whereas, looking at previous games, he would have continued that run, right deep into the opposition half and looking to influence the game up there. But it just shows a good confidence in the guys up top that we can do that and can release the ball and can continue to have an effect without that cavalry, galloping up the field.
I was thinking Lee as well must have been looking at Oisin Mullan and going to himself, you know what? This is going to be a bit of crack now this year because you see me, Jason Doherty. These lads, yeah.
He's thinking I can play. He's thinking I get away with three or four more years at least. Now. No bother. He'll do 40-50% of my running. So Lee is another 5 years in him, no problem.
Steve, I don't want to overemphasize it because Kerry have every right to say, Mayo blew it in the final last year, and we have loads of talent, and we'll take them. And Tyrone absolutely are looking, say we bet them once, we'll beat them again, and Dublin can think, we'll figure this out. But at the same time, all three of those management teams and maybe Galway and other teams have to be thinking to themselves, mother God, a fully fit Oisin Mullan back with them. It's such a game changer.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Look, we knew this. That's why there was such a focus around him leaving. And then when the conversation, shifted to, oh, well, he might be staying, then, the hope started to build within the county. So you could see it the last day. He everything he does is a touch of class. So he defends well, he carries ball well, he kicks well. There's nothing he can't, he's phenomenal in the air. He kicked a great point when he got the opportunity. There's nothing the guy can't do well. He looks fantastic on the pitch, pink boots, flowing locks, tan, good looking fella. Jeez, if I had his hair, I'd be on a catwalk somewhere in Milan. That's the reality. The guy is X factor, really, and he's as good a defender as there is in the country at the moment.
Yeah, it was great to watch him. Do you know, the one time he got into a bit of trouble too, I love this, Edwin, because it gets back to your point about how good German O'Connor played. There was one point where he had four Dublin players around him. I was like, he's probably going to get out of this. And then at one stage, it was like in a Star Wars movie where they're taking on four different guys and you're like, oh, he actually might be in trouble. He might be about to get caught here. And then German O'Connor swoops in, gets a little touch on the ball, saves the day. And I thought it was actually more the cameo there was German O'Connor. It just underlined how he was everywhere, even helping out Oisin Mullen the one time he needed to be helped.
Yeah, I know the one you're on about, yeah. And like, they had no right to maintain possession in that instance, you know. But they probably had the two best foot soldiers for the job, you know. But yeah, look at the fact that he's waiting is such a huge boost. And, you know, if there was no talk of Geelong over the winter and it just went kind of along an even trajectory from the All-Ireland final to the start of this year's league, there'd be no talk about it. But the fact that we'd almost lost him and we got him back, it felt like, you know, like a new, like we were gaining a player nearly. So it's the way it kind of played out has probably done the mood of the squad and, you know, the mood of a lot of fans. The power of good, like, you know, that, you know, he's thrown his lot in with Mayo, you know, so he obviously sees the potential in the next few years.
Our Patreon members know about the smoking room section of the podcast, which is the additional little bit of audio that you get where we have an any other business rant. I'm actually saving a teeny bit of conversation as well from this match day chat about that too, because I might ask you a little bit about some of the players who are just emerging there as well, McHugh, Brickington, players like that, and maybe some of the subs impact. But we'll do that in that section. I'll also get your predictions on our full preview show of the weekend's game coming on Thursday, because we really wanted to give this game as much time as possible. And with that in mind, just a couple of more questions to finish. One, Stephen, is this the wit Mayo got on the game? It created a lot of space for Robbie Henley. Edwin, you come in off the back of this, but Robbie Henley at one point was able to do a couple of kicks over the top as well, Niall Morgan style. And you want to talk a little bit about his accuracy in those kind of situations. But Stephen, on the wit and on how Mayo players at times were standing right on the sideline, absolutely on the sideline, creating as much space as possible. And it did stretch Dublin.
It did, yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about it, and the other thing about it is, like, Dublin were vulnerable defensively anyway. So when you have a team that's vulnerable defensively and struggling to hold an opposition, the more width you create, then you know creates more problems for the opposition. So, you know, when you have defenders who probably are low on confidence and who don't want to be in a 1v1 situation, you know, the more you can stretch them, the better. And we've seen that. And again, you know, pointing to Robbie's kick for Aidan Orm's goal, you know, absolutely pinpoint a bullet down into Jermid's chest. And then again, he's winning that ball far out to the side. And there's just 40, 50 yards in front of that total full back line. You'd be losing your mind. You know, as someone who played in a full back line, who played a lot of football at full back, cornerback, you know, when there's 50, 60 yards in front of you, you're just losing your head. You're losing your head at everyone around you. So, you know, look, the width we showed, and again, you know, Brian Walsh did a great job in that regard. Jack Carney was so impressed with the discipline he had, you know, in terms of, you know, hugging that touchline consistently while still getting involved in the game, got the goal, got plenty of good contributions. So it is great to see. And again, it shows a level of confidence in the team that we're able to create, you know, that gap and that sort of 40, 50 yard lack of connection. But we still have the confidence then to maintain possession and then to shift that ball inside to the guys. Very, very good.
It was interesting as well to see any time Robbie was in possession of the ball in open play, the Dubs were inclined to invite him on, and basically no one went to him. They all marked and pushed up on Mayo's defenders to, you know, force him into a decision. And he very nearly got caught in the first half. May have picked the ball off the ground. I think he did. Might have balanced out Matty Ruan's goal being disallowed. And I think Mayo were 4-2 down at that stage. They got the rub of the green there. Instead of being 5-2 down, or possibly a goal, you never know, they go up the other end and it's 4-3. So it was a big moment. But I think you saw then in the second half a couple of times where he is able to kick these 60-yard passes off the hands. He picked one to Stephen Cohen underneath the Cusick stand. And again, it's just something that Mayo are going to have to work on. Okay, if opposition teams are going to do this, what's our out ball? You know, what's our movement like? They're obviously pushing up. They're not marking zonally. So you're going to have to make the space. You're going to have to, you know, push to one side and get a runner running into space, and that's your ball. And Mayo figured that out as they went, but it wasn't. You saw a few times there, they were just being a little bit tentative in the full back line, and you were kind of waiting for a mistake to happen because they were kind of almost inviting it on. But I think they got on top of it eventually.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity, actually, to be honest, because Robbie is an exceptionally skilled kicker of the ball. Now, teams are not going to leave some of our defenders. You know, they're not going to leave Lee Keegan. They're not going to leave Oisin Mullen. You know, they're not going to leave probably even guys like Michael Plunkett because he's so good in possession. They're going to probably leave Robbie on the ball, and there will be opportunities for Robbie to step out and fire that kick. So again, I'm sure it's something they will work on at training, you know, where teams will let him have it. And I think it could be a really good weapon. Now, you know, if he does it several times and scores come off, they probably get a bit wise to it. But, you know, I think there are opportunities to do some good things in that space too. So look, and he is playing so well too, you know, absolutely fantastically well.
All right, lads. I mean, we talked about it before, and all we talked about in the WhatsApp group all week is, but how bad were Dublin? And we said, let's talk a lot about how bad Dublin were. We've gone an hour, we haven't even mentioned it. But like, I think we speak about this entire game, and our fans know this, and I'm sure opposition people know this, in the context of the fact that it's February, in the context, Edwin, of the fact that Dublin were abysmal in the second half. I actually thought they were quite good in the first half. And watching it back, I still think they are. They took some great scores. But, you know, and they have some great players, unbelievable players to come back. So while they don't seem to be the same team, and we'll all stand by that now at this stage, they still are an All-Ireland contender.
Yeah, they've quality to come back. There's no doubt about that. Can you rule them out of the All-Ireland Championship? I don't think you can, but I think they have a serious amount of work to do. Because it wasn't just about personnel the last day, and I know it's the time of the year, and I know they brought in, you know, 15 or 16 new players, but they just looked disorganized, demotivated. And I remember when Jim Gavin stepped aside, and I was talking to a guy who knows a lot about leadership in the business world, and he said it is going to be so hard for anyone taking over there because all the players are established, they've all won their All-Ireland medals, and no matter who comes in, what authority does that person have over a player with 6 or 7 or 8 All-Ireland medals? And I think, you know, they kind of freewheeled into an All-Ireland under Desi in COVID in 2020. But that has had, obviously Mayo halted that gallop last year. And there was kind of signs that they were just all wasn't quite well. And they just, you know, like I read Kieran Whelan talking about, oh, they worked hard and they tried hard. And undoubtedly they did. But just the edge that was there with them didn't seem to be there. I really didn't see Mayo winning the game when I saw who Mayo were missing and how much that game had to mean for Dublin. From a point of view, last year's All-Ireland semi-final and after losing their first two league games. And the fact that they weren't at the level that, you know, you would expect a team in that situation to be, I don't know, it doesn't all go well for them at the minute. Obviously, a lot can change between now and championship. But I just, they had enough quality on the field the last day to be a lot more competitive than they were. That's the way I describe it. You know, Mayo were playing with as many inexperienced players, you know. How many All-Ireland medals were on the field for Dublin? And I think in that context, I think their performance was terrible. And that's why I would be putting a big asterisk beside the Mayo performance. It's a massive step in the right direction in terms of doing things differently. But it's going to get much more searching tests in the week ahead.
Yeah, but that's why, Stephen, just judging by, as best we can, straw poll of what the Mayo reaction is, I think that's accepted across Mayo. I think once we realise that, in general, Mayo fans realise this is an early season league game with a Dublin team in disarray, I think you can enjoy the Mayo performance for what it was in that context. Like, that's important.
Yeah, you have to go out and beat these teams, right? It's a competitive game. You know, what you want to see is a performance, an intent, and guys putting their hands up. And Mayo did that in spades, right? Dublin are a shadow of what they were. It's very like, look, it's so, the correlation between this and Alex Ferguson, for example, leaving United, you know, it's unbelievable. It's nearly identical. You know, like, Farrell has become the David Moyes of Gaelic football. It was an impossible task. It was an impossible task, really, Rob. You know, he's coming in I think people underestimated how good Jim Gavin was as a manager. Like, literally nothing, no stone unturned. Like, so structured in relation to their game plan, their system. Every single player knew exactly what he was supposed to do and, you know, where he was supposed to go with the ball, who he was passing it to, where he was going after he was making that pass, how they were set up defensively, the goalkeeper off the back of that. They're a shadow in that regard. You look at someone like Davy Byrne, for example. The amount of ball Davy Byrne's turned over from the Ireland semi-final last year, and I've watched all the league games that have been on TV from their perspective this year, I'd say he's turned more ball over in the last four games I've watched him than the previous 10 years I've watched him. So there's something hugely amiss in relation to how they're being set up and how they're prepared. And there's plenty of rumblings up here as well. And I talk to people and I know sort of bits and pieces in terms of what's going on. You know, it's not the same setup, obviously, by any stretch. And, you know, they're not firing as they were firing when Gavin was in charge. Hugely influential and the biggest loss they've had more than any player that's left.
Brilliant. I love the David Moyes analogy as well, because as we can see with West Ham and as we know over his career, it sums up Diddy Farrell's a super manager. He's proven it on underage. He's taken on a poison chalice here. I think that's the point.
Totally. Lads, and then you look at Kilkenny, maybe not, you know, if you look at maybe Kilkenny won't be the same situation because they haven't probably been successful. But if someone had taken, you know, Kilkenny over 6 or 7 years ago after they'd won sort of 8 or 9 out of 10 out of Ireland's, you'd have seen the exact same scenario. You cannot follow these people.
Brian Cody's more like Arsene Wenger, I think. I like that analogy.
Well, he is now.
Yeah, I like it.
But, you know, yeah, I sort of... Yeah.
All right. Listen, that's it from us, folks. But as usual, for our Patreon members, we have a smoking room. All you get time for on this week's Mayo News Football Podcast, Stephen and Edwin, is you get like one word, or I might let it go to a sentence on who's going to win between Mayo and Armagh. Stephen.
Mayo, I think. Look, it's going to be a really, really good game. I hope it is. If sort of the two teams continue in the vein they have over the last number of weeks, we should see a cracker. I hope the day is good. I hope the weather is good. The Hyde is a lovely track. It's a nice pitch. It's conducive to good ball. So look, Mayo are in good form. They're in good fettle. I'd be interested to see the team, but I'm going to go for Mayo win and continue the momentum.
Edwin.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I'm looking forward to seeing Rian O'Neill and who picks him up. I think that's going to be a pivotal battle. I like to see Lee Keegan on him, to be honest. I think it's he's our best option to shut him down the next day, unless, you know, depending on Brendan Harrison and his fitness and availability. But I just think, Armagh stuttered a little bit against Monaghan the last day, and I think Mayo are coming in with just a little bit more momentum. But like I say, it'll be interesting to see now how they mix it up the next day. You know, what are they able to do against Armagh that they weren't able to do against Dublin, or vice versa? You know, what were they able to do against Dublin that Armagh maybe might restrict them a little bit more on, and how do they adapt accordingly?
Thank you, Edwin.
No problem.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Rob.
I finish with the first paragraph from Sean Rice's column this week. No Pádraig O'Hara, no Paddy Durkin, no Jason Doherty, no Brendan Harrison, no Aidan O'Shea for most of the game. 7 changes in all from their win against Monaghan. That's not a bad first paragraph before you start talking about Mayo beating Dublin at Croke Park for the first time since 1971 in the league. More of that in the paper. Pick up a copy when you can. Sign up to the Patreon page if you can. Otherwise, we'll talk to you in a week.